Right, now I officially begin. Esoteric Astrology 87, Section B, with the idea that Virgo is unique. The nine signs are related. Yes, I think the thing we should do, oh, how interesting that would be. I wonder in a way if we should do that now. Maybe we should. This would be a little exercise, quite an exercise actually, wouldn't it? And it would be a little bit of a delay, but as long as the subject is on us, we could perhaps legitimately do this. We could say this, that what are the signs relating to Aries? Well, they are going to be through Mars, Scorpio, Sagittarius, through Mercury, Gemini, Virgo, and Scorpio again. Gemini, Virgo, Scorpio again. Through Uranus, it's going to be, depends on whether we consider veiled planets or not, through Uranus we're going to have Libra, Aquarius, and maybe Leo. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, with the possibility of Leo. Leo seems to be in a special category. It has veiled planets, Neptune and Uranus, and is it legitimate to use those? Well, certainly DK uses the veiled Vulcan, veiled by the Moon in Virgo, to bring in Taurus, doesn't he? Now, if we really expanded this out and we included the rulers of decanates so far, we would find every sign probably related to every other sign in some way or another, either by ray or by ruler or by decanate ruler. We would probably find that. But anyway, Aries via Mars, it relates to Scorpio, Sagittarius, Gemini, Virgo. That's Scorpio, Sagittarius. Via Mercury, its esoteric ruler into Gemini and Virgo. Am I forgetting anything? Scorpio would be repeated, of course. And we might maybe put in this kind of condition, Scorpio, when a sign comes in again through a different ruler. Through Uranus, we would have Libra and Aquarius and Leo. And then if we want to retain the sign itself, DK did retain the mother sign, we might be able to do that, but we can just say, we'll put it in brackets of this kind, Aries. Okay. All right, this is interesting, and it's a little bit of mental gymnastics here, but let's see how this works. With Taurus, let's work on this together. You know, it helps us think of rulerships together. Probably you could do this, you know, yourself, but it helps. We have Venus, so immediately what's going to happen here is we're going to have Gemini in order. That's the esoteric ruler. We're going to have Libra. We're going to have Capricorn. Gemini, Libra, and Capricorn. And with the ruler Vulcan, we're going to have, I'm not putting down these rulers, that might be a little too tedious. I would think, though, that you would be able to see exactly why these connections exist. So Taurus is itself going to be there, but also Virgo will come in via Vulcan. And then here is Taurus. So is that all that's related to Taurus? Just 1, 2, 3, 4. The veiled Vulcan. No, I think we've got to bring in Aquarius, because there's a veiled Vulcan in Aquarius, also a veiled Vulcan. And there is Vulcan in other places and decanates, of course, but Venus in Gemini, Venus in Libra, Venus in Capricorn, Vulcan in relation to Virgo, Vulcan in relation to Aquarius, both of them are veiled. I'm just leaving those brackets around Leo because they are, in a way, Leo is rather special because Leo was not pulled in to the nine signs which are related to Virgo through its rulers, even though there is a veiled Neptune in Leo and a veiled Neptune in Leo and a veiled Neptune in Virgo. So it was not pulled in. Okay. Let's go on with this. This is a little bit of a departure, but okay, Gemini. All right, so what do we have? We have Mercury, right? So Mercury will relate us esoterically to Aries, it will relate us orthodoxly to Virgo, and hierarchically to Scorpio. We have Venus, which will relate us esoterically to Taurus, and also exoterically to Libra, and hierarchically to Capricorn. And we have the Earth, which will relate us esoterically to Sagittarius. And there's Gemini by itself. Gemini by itself. Okay. No, that's not what I want. Okay. So if we, now in the relations to Virgo, he included the inclusive synthetic mother sign. In Gemini, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And Gemini itself makes 8. Is that legitimate to include the 8? Well, we will see. In terms of Cancer, we have the Moon, which immediately takes us to Virgo esoterically, takes us to Aquarius hierarchically, and we have Neptune taking us to the veiled Leo. The Sun veils Neptune, and in a strange sense to that was when it was doubled. Okay, in a strange sense also to Virgo is mentioned again, so let's mention it again in the way we did before using that particular type of bracket, and we will look for, well, I don't know what kind of brackets to use anymore, but let's just say in a strange way to Pisces, because Neptune has a strong strong sort of deeply esoteric relationship to Pisces, which it rules in the sense of all of humanity. So in Cancer, there's not too many relations, just through the Moon, Virgo, and Aquarius. Now, if we want to bring in the exaltations, that would be another line of connection, but I don't think, we need to do that. Leo is there through the veiled, the Sun veiling Neptune, but Leo may be in a special category because it wasn't included, as it well could have been. It well could have been included, but DK wanted to leave it out, showing it to be a sign of crisis. Okay. Now, Leo itself, well, the Sun is not found in any of these. But via veils, we have Cancer, and we have Aries, because of the veiled Uranus, and we have Libra, and we have Aquarius. So these are all via veils. Let's just say that the veiled Neptune, Sun veiling Neptune in Leo, connects it with Cancer. Uh-huh. And also then with Virgo, and also with Aquarius. These are all veiled associations. So the next Aquarius coming in here will be a double. Then via the veiled Uranus, so we have here, I hope this is not getting too confusing. I know for someone who may be new to astrology, I mean, who wants to do this? But let's just see. I'll try to bring that back. Okay, I can't bring it all the way back. I want to. Uh-huh. I don't know. Something has happened here. Maybe I can move this forward. Well, something has happened. I think maybe it's over here. And, uh-huh. Well, I'll just pause for a moment. That seems to be the only decent thing to do. Okay. Okay, somehow I have managed to get everything back in order. This is a relational exercise. I think you see that there are different ways that the signs are related to each other, so that when the Tibetan brings this up in the future, you'll see how it was done, right? Now, Virgo we've already done, so there's no sense. There are nine signs. Virgo, nine signs related, and this includes Virgo. Okay. Of course, if we want to include the sign we're dealing with in order to make our point numerologically, you know, we'll just bring it in. With Leo, we have a problem here. Everything is veiled. Everything is veiled. The sun itself relates to no other sign. It is no other sign is ruled by the sun. I suppose this tells us somehow that our solar logos is somehow uniquely related to the sign Leo. I suspect that Sirius and our solar logos and the constellation Leo create some kind of important triangle. We already know there is a triangle, Sirius, Leo, Jupiter, and Jupiter and the Sun are in some ways interchangeable. So then we would have a Sirius, Leo, Sun. That would be a triangle. Now let's look at Libra. Okay. And we have Libra, and we would have Venus as the ruler, right? So Taurus, exoterically, Gemini, esoterically, Capricorn, hierarchically. We would have Uranus, so we have Aries, hierarchically. We would have a Leo veil in there, because the Sun veils Uranus, hierarchically, in Leo. We would have Libra, and we would have Aquarius. And then with Saturn, we would have only Capricorn, and let's just say Aquarius again, because the exoteric ruler of Aquarius was for so long considered to be Saturn. And we would repeat Libra itself. Now, how many is that? One, related to Libra, okay. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, in the normal way of consideration. If we consider Libra, that would be eight itself, and Leo is in there under that usual relation, which unusual relation which was left out when we considered Virgo. Now, I suppose, you know, the important thing to do here is to look at these relations and go in and look at the signs which are not in relation via the rulers. Now, they might come into relation via the rays. I think we will establish that every sign is related to every other, I think beyond any shadow of a doubt, one way or another. Now here's Scorpio, and via Mars it relates to Aries and to Sagittarius only, I think. And via Mercury, its hierarchical ruler relates to Gemini. Oh, no, first to Aries again. So Aries comes in twice. Related to Gemini. And is there to Virgo. I think that's it. And then we put Scorpio itself. So basically there's 1, 2, 3, 4 relations, and there would be 5 if we have Scorpio. So Scorpio is one of those signs, through its rulers, not much related to many zodiacal signs. If we deal with Sagittarius, we begin with Jupiter, which will relate us to, some of the earlier ones. It relates us to Virgo hierarchically, and Pisces in the normal, well, Aquarius esoterically, and Pisces in the normal sense. When it comes to the Earth, it will relate us to Gemini, and when it comes to Mars, it relates us to Aries and to Scorpio. And then we repeat itself, Sagittarius, as DK did. Okay, so it's related then to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 signs, 7 including itself. Now, if I've made an error here, you know, I'm going relatively fast, and this is sort of a spontaneous idea, just to look at these relations. Ideas, you know, we're studying the great science of relations. So maybe new ideas will come up as we look at these relations. With Capricorn, we have Saturn. And the only other planet sign we can relate to is Aquarius, in the sense that Saturn used to rule Aquarius and is sometimes considered still as ruling Aquarius, though I think that's in a special category. Its own true ruler is Uranus. When it comes to Venus, we have Taurus, Libra, and, I should have put here Gemini esoterically, and Libra exoterically, and then Capricorn itself. So 1, 2, 3, 4 relations for Capricorn, not so many. When we deal with Mars and we deal with Saturn, there are not so many relations. Capricorn. Okay, let's take a look at this. Right. Okay, when it comes to Aquarius, shall we consider Saturn? If we consider Saturn, we will have Capricorn, and we will have also Libra, hierarchically, if we consider Saturn. If we consider Uranus, we will have Aries. We will have the peculiar Leo situation. We will have Libra again, and we will have Aquarius itself. Well, that's its own nature. That is Uranus. Okay, when we consider Jupiter, well, I just did Aquarius, didn't I? I did Aquarius up there. Well, let's do it again. When we have Jupiter, we will have Sagittarius, and we'll have Pisces, and we shouldn't leave out, we should have put in here Virgo, quite a bit coming in. And then, of course, let's just say this. I will let you fill in the veils. Oh, I'll do it. Okay. The veiled Vulcan will connect us to Taurus. And, let's say we will have Virgo again via the veiled Vulcan. And the veiled Neptune will lead us to Cancer. And we will have Virgo again. Okay. And we will also have the veiled Neptune. We will have also Pisces again. So did I do that correctly? Quite a bit. You know, this is a sign of universality, and there are many, many connections. Saturn will take us to Capricorn and to Libra. Uranus to Aries, to a veiled Uranus hierarchically in Leo. It will take us to Libra again. It will take us to Aquarius again, but that's its own self, of course. The veiled Vulcan will take us to, veiled Jupiter will take us to Virgo. Jupiter will take us to Virgo and to Sagittarius and to Pisces. Right. And the veil, and the veiled Vulcan, hierarchically, will take us to Taurus and to Virgo again, and to Aquarius, of course. And the veiled Uranus will take, Neptune will take us to Cancer and Virgo. And in a sense, good old Leo again. and then we have Uranus again, so there's no use repeating it. So there's a lot of connections. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 connections. And then if we list Aquarius by itself, we would get 9. Now somehow I got 10 above. Maybe I was counting Leo. If I count Leo, I get 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. If I count Aquarius itself. Finally, let's just finish with Pisces. It's kind of an academic exercise here we've been doing. We come in with Jupiter first. We come in with Jupiter first. And Jupiter will bring us to Virgo hierarchically. It will bring us to Sagittarius, and of course to Pisces, naturally. And Pluto will bring us only to Scorpio and to Pisces, naturally. And the special condition of Neptune will bring us to, via Neptune, we will have Cancer and Virgo itself, and we will have Leo, naturally, because the sun veils Leo, and we will have Aquarius through another veil, then to mention Pisces itself. It is complex, no question. It is complex, but we need to see all of these lines and energies crossing, crisscrossing, interrelating. Such a vision will be given to us on the mountaintop of transfiguration, where the many lines of energy will be seen making their amazing patterns with each other. And all of the connections of one thing to another in this great group that we call the zodiac of constellations, the 12 lords making a group, all of these connections and interconnections will be demonstrated. As I say, I could go on with this, you know, but I could look at the ray connections and so forth, and the decanate connections. By the time we finish with it, there will be nothing left unrelated. You know, even Leo, you know, we'd start looking at the places where the sun is implicated, where Neptune and Uranus are implicated, where rays 1 and 5 are coming in, and then via the various aspects. I realize this has been rather academic, so I hope it's not too tedious for you. Now, the thing that would be interesting to do, maybe we can just, you know, we did it in one case, was with Virgo, what we saw, what was left out, and we'll just do them in big letters. We left out Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. Now, we could do this with all of them. And perhaps we would see in these lack of relationships, at least using the standard method, what it is that separates a particular sign from the other signs which just are not present. I'll just do Aries for the heck of it, you know. Let's just say, and I'll do it this way. I'll say, Taurus is not present. Cancer is not present, but via the sixth ray, we could certainly find it, couldn't we? Leo is definitely present through Uranus, only it's a special case. Virgo is present. Libra is present. Scorpio is present via Mars. Sagittarius present via Mars. Capricorn, well, you see, Capricorn is not present, except its exalted ruler is Mars, which is so powerful in Aries. But let's take Capricorn out of the picture. But via the first ray, of course, Aries is related to Capricorn. Aquarius is related. And Pisces is not related. But, of course, the first ray Pluto that's there, and Aries connected with Shambhala. There's so many different connections. You know, excuse me for indulging my Mercury here a little bit. But you could go through this and you could see particularly which are the signs which are not related in the sense of using the planet and its ruler. And I think it would be most interesting. Lots will be revealed from this, but it is rather a technical consideration, so forgive me for this. And what we're really looking at here is what? We're looking at all nine energies are required to bring a man to the point where the world and influence of the two solar systems have done their task. And here we're going to ask simply, what have the two solar systems done? I'm going to just do that. What have the two solar systems done? Okay, what have they done through these nine signs? Let's repeat that. That all nine energies are required to bring a man to the point where the world and influence of the two solar systems have done their task. So the nine energies help the two solar systems finish their task. Let's put this down. The nine energies help the two solar systems finish their task. And we'll look at that in just a moment. Well, I've written extensively on these subjects and shown all the possible relations I could think of. For instance, if we look at Aries via the first ray of Aries, we're going to be able to relate that constellation to Pluto, to Vulcan, to Mars in its ray nature, a subtle ray nature, I think, to Saturn, which has a first ray connected with it, to Uranus with its first ray monad, although other relations prevail there as well. Via the seventh ray of Aries, we're going to be able to relate that sign not only to Uranus, but to Jupiter, and there will be many other planets in the system to which relations can come. So the passage of energy via strong, direct, subtle, and indirect lines of connection are many. And I think we can always find a way to relate one thing to another. If not via the rulers, then via the rays of the rulers, or the rays of the constellations, or via the triplicity or quadruplicity, there will always be methods of connecting. Well, I probably carry all this a little bit too far, but I would suggest, you know, going down these constellational or zodiacal relationships and trying to see the constellations or the signs which are not related through the rulers, and then those that are not related through the rays, and then those that are not related through rays coming through the constellations. And a master chart could be created along these lines, which would tell a story which is subtle and immanent in the whole system. It would also train the mind in the art of pure reason, whereby the relationships between all things can be perceived at first, I suppose, through the reasoning process, and eventually instantaneously. Anyway, I had started to say that the two solar systems are being consummated in man, and that is the third aspect and the second aspect, and the nine energies, 4, 3, and 2, 4 mutable energies, 3 fixed energies, and 2 cardinal energies, help this consummation come about, or let's just say, bring about the consummated work of the third and second aspects in man. They are creative constellations, building up these virtues and achievements in the human being, which are then tested in the signs of crisis, which are omitted, Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. So, what are these nine doing, really? Says the Tibetan, they are preparing the vehicle of reception and protection, which is the personality, the form, the self-conscious man. Look at these qualities of the personality, reception and protection. Well, we see that in these lower worlds, reception is necessary if the lower worlds are ever going to be redeemed, if their vibration is going to be changed and their rhythm increased and the general quality of matter improved, if transmutation is to occur. As far as protection goes, the natural rhythms and cycles of the personality following natural law serve to guard the growing consciousness and keep it within due bounds, and eventually soul laws will outgrow natural laws. What are these nine doing? They are bringing bringing into manifestation. Let's see, what is it? What did I do there? Okay. Almost lost that, huh? They are bringing into manifestation, thereby, the hidden man of the heart. This is such a beautiful phrase. This is the inner consciousness, the Christ consciousness, the inner man of the heart, the Christ within, the soul, the group conscious man. They're making it possible for this inner man of the heart, hidden man of the heart, to emerge. A mode of perception which did not exist at first and which is inclusive and wise and magnetically harmoniously related to other forms and consciousnesses, gradually bringing into manifestation of the lower worlds this hidden man of the heart, who exists in a way that is freer in the higher worlds. So this is what the nine are doing. What will be the objective and the consummation of the activity of the cardinal cross during the next solar system is hidden in the revelation which comes to the man who has taken the third initiation, when the monadic will becomes consciously recognized and its tendency towards a certain destiny will be incipiently conferred. So the hidden man of the heart, let's just say the Christ within, the soul, the group conscious man, must emerge in this second solar system. And the two crosses, principally, will cooperate with each other, and soul will manifest through form. That's what we're seeking on this earth, to bring together, in a way, the two crosses, mutable and fixed. That would mean a soul infusion, the secondary soul, through the third-ray personality of our earth. And when we think about our own microcosmic situation, it's the generic second-ray soul through the generic third-ray personality. This is what we seek. In that way, we are bringing about a kind of consummation. I guess it happens at the third initiation of the power of the second ray expressing through the third ray. Beyond that point, it's the will that begins to come in, and we are tending in our thought towards consummations which will occur in the third solar system. I suppose whoever passes the third initiation and moves beyond it towards the fourth, where the power of Pluto and the destructive power of Vulcan are so strong, is already coming into the position where he can understand somewhat the agenda of the will, which will be the major agenda of the next solar system, with a probable first-ray personality for the solar logos. How these rays are conferred for the great logoi, that is a question. There's a big question in general. How are rays conferred? How is it that rays are changed? At one point, the Tibetan talks about changing one's focus. The soul changes its focus from one ray to another. It's still a bit mysterious, but we know that the soul can change the ray upon which it is expressing, according to certain formulas. And perhaps it's simply a question of meditation and concentration for the soul. Okay, so that's hidden in the revelation which comes to the man who is taking the third degree, because the monad is involved, and that is generically on the first ray, although there are all seven monadic rays. It is connected naturally with the spirit, or first aspect of divinity. That is the objective in consummation, is connected with the spirit or first aspect of divinity, or with the monad and with the expression of the divine consciousness. That is, not technically speaking, the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is more concerned with the second aspect, and the divine consciousness with the first. The divine consciousness is of the monad, the spiritual consciousness is of the soul on the higher mental plane, and even of the spiritual triad. In some ways, the spiritual triad shares the influence of the soul ray and the monadic ray, as is evident on page 177 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So the true ego is the spiritual triad, as we have said, and the egoic ray, or the soul ray, is very evident in the structure of the spiritual triad through all three permanent atoms of the spiritual triad. Until a man has, however, taken this initiation, he profits not from anything that I could tell him in this connection. Well, that's quite a statement. For its impartation also, words are useless and in fact do not exist. So sometimes we have to use words to hint at realizations which are subtle, real, but for which the embodying word does not yet exist. So in a way, we have to go through certain states of consciousness factually before we may find ourselves attempting to devise words to describe them, and even so, they would probably be paradoxical and confusing to someone who had not been through the experience itself. But the curriculum of the wheel really does begin at the third degree, although we kind of hint at it as we build the Antikorana. It's like Mercury moving into the sun. At the fourth degree, it's very strong. In mastership, there's a strong first ray, because that initiation is ruled by the first ray, so there is a sense in which the master is mature in his expression of the will, though it is still not complete, because Chohanship and other higher initiations lie ahead. As I have told you, Virgo is regarded by the esoteric teachers of the hierarchy to be identified with the third aspect of divinity. This is interesting, isn't it? Because the rays that come through it, are the second and the sixth ray. So we put this down, yet the rays which express at this time through Virgo are the second and sixth. Anyway, let matter reign, and we know that Virgo represents matter, the polar opposite of spirit. In one way, it is true. But if we think that a human being is complex, how much more complex is a planetary logos? How much more complex a solar logos? How much more complex is a constellational logos? So we are making huge generalities about these great beings and their mode of manifestation, not realizing all of the intricacy of their expression. You know, Virgo is identified with the third aspect of divinity, yet it's involved with the sun and with the father. It's involved with the third ray as a result of being identified with the third aspect, and yet it's involved with the second ray and the sixth ray. It is foundational to our solar system, and yet extremely active in producing the goal of our solar system, which still has quite an agenda to fulfill in terms of merging with that which was developed in the previous major solar system. Anyway, trying to resist the tendency to go into too much detail, which is perhaps given when we're dealing with Virgo, we'll move on. So Virgo is regarded by the esoteric teachers of the hierarchy to be identified with the third aspect of divinity, with the mother principle, and is believed to be the director of the energies developed and recognized in the first solar system. And we wouldn't want to exclude Cancer, would we? Which might be a constellation or a lord of a constellation, even more identified with the third aspect of divinity. I mean, when you look at it, the rays coming through Cancer are really related to the third aspect of divinity, the third and the seventh. It is for this reason that in this solar system that Virgo is subjected predominantly to the influences of the second, fourth, and sixth ray energies through Jupiter, second ray, the moon, and Mercury, fourth ray, and Neptune, sixth ray. Well, but something's really being said there, isn't it? Subjective. Now, if I think of subjection, I think of a superior force acting upon an inferior force, and I might think of great ray energies subjecting Virgo to their particular quality, namely the second and the sixth ray. But if I look at Jupiter, second ray, moon, well, veiling, Vulcan, but moon really having no vibration of its own, how is the moon going to really subject Virgo, the lord of the constellation Virgo, to anything? These little planetary lords are, in the conventional sense, in no position to subject the lord of the constellation to anything. But we could say that it is, in a way, ruled by these lesser planetary lords, which condition the way in which the influence of the lord of the constellation Virgo reaches others. So that word subjected is something that we really have to look at carefully. It's usually a superior upon an inferior, and yet we have four here subjecting energies, which are all inferior. But perhaps the implication is that that Virgo might be ruled by other planets in a previous solar system, at least from the point of view of those in our solar system and those upon the Earth. Right now, it is ruled by planets primarily which are carrying along the 2-4-6 line. And it has something to do with helping Virgo, is Virgo really evolving in this sense? Or is it that the influences reaching us via Virgo need to be those that are in addition to the third aspect of divinity? You kind of wonder, you know, can these ruling planets, these little lords and so forth, affect the evolution of the lord of the constellation Virgo, really? Can any even solar logos, such as the solar logos of our solar system, really affect a change of rays in Virgo? But it does seem to me that in the previous solar system or at that time, the lord of the constellation Virgo was being subjected to strongly third ray, maybe seventh ray energies from still superior ray sources superior to itself. Whatever its planetary rulers may have been, those planets which are connected to it via affinity, are they still the same? I don't know. And we don't even know whether if these planets that we're talking about here, except for the moon, existed in the previous solar system, were they focused on the same ray? Maybe they were still rulers of Virgo and had affinity with Virgo, but were focused on a different ray, possibly. Mercury, for instance, on the third ray, perhaps, in the previous solar system. So it's very intricate interconnections between these lesser lords and the greater lords. But anyway, in order to effect some kind of transition with respect to our solar system, the sort of third ray energies of the mother principle, of the third aspect, have to be modified with respect to Virgo. Does this mean that Virgo itself is being modified through the impression of still superior ray energies, or simply that the influence of Virgo is reaching us via some soft line planets which make it possible for Virgo's influence no longer to be entirely that of the third and, let us say, seventh ray? The moon and Mercury together indicate the activity of higher and lower mind. Well, we've more than once looked at Mercury as related to higher mind. More than once have we considered Mercury as related to the higher mind. And the moon easily can be understood as related to the lower mind, to the senses, to that which is concrete, to that which pertains to the lower 18 subplanes, of which the four highest are the four lower subplanes of mind. So the moon represents, in a way, the third ray in a lower respect, and Mercury the third ray in a higher. The moon, as the mother of the form, has its third ray component, even though at this time it is veiling probably an undiscovered fourth ray planet. I think Dr. Baker brought that idea forward, and maybe the Tibetan has two. One can't remember everything, but it's in my mind that that is the case. The moon and Mercury together indicate the activity of higher and lower mind and are therefore, well, he goes on to say it, doesn't he, related to the third ray of active intelligence which controlled the first solar system. In a way, lower consciousness is related to the third ray, middle consciousness to the second, and the highest possible consciousness to the first ray. Except, of course, that the second ray is unusually powerful. in this solar system, and thus it will ever be, I think, in a solar system ruled by our solar logos, who has a second-ray soul and probably a soft-line monadic ray. So higher and lower mind, Mercury, I've always speculated that it has a third-ray personality, the god of thieves, you know, god of illusion, god of confusion, you know, the Maya aspect of Mercury. And when it comes to the moon, it's controlling the form, and the form is of the third ray, generically considered. So they're both related to the third ray of active intelligence, which controlled in the first solar system. I think Mercury was active in the first solar system and is older by far, in a sense, than Venus, which through its fifth ray may have been related to the earlier solar system, just the way Sirius was. But Mercury is still older and more occult, more related to the third aspect. Venus essentially related to the second. Together, they indicate the activity of higher and lower mind are therefore related to the third ray. There is consequently only one planet which is distinctly and purely first ray energy, although we can only say that, I think, from a soul perspective. You can't say that a planet rules the heart of the sun, which Vulcan does. I can show that to you in case it just seems like such a strange idea. Here it is. Vulcan, the one who reveals that which is deeply hidden and brings it up to the light, esoterically, the heart of the sun. Connected also with Esoteric Psychology 1, page 420. Esoterically, the heart of the sun. Now, watch out, watch that word esoterically, because it oftentimes indicates the monadic ray. Check out page 420 and you'll see that the esoteric rays of the three synthesizing planets are 1, 2, and 3. That means, as I interpret it, they're monadic rays. Only Vulcan, then, is said to be in this context distinctly and purely first-ray energy, at least in its soul expression. These are points which advanced astrologers will later elaborate, but which at the present time mean little. So if you think Virgo is largely, foundationally, a third-ray constellation, it's believed to be identified with the third aspect of divinity. And now, in this solar system, it's identified increasingly with the second aspect of divinity. But because Vulcan is related, there is also a push forward towards the first aspect of divinity. Probably, I'm guessing, that we're still within the process of development of the one about whom not to be said. Our little solar system is involved with the cosmic logos, which is a major chakra in the one about whom not to be said. And so we will still work for a long time, who knows how long, within the expression of this super constellational logos called the one about whom not may be said, which I think is two removes from our solar system. Not just one remove, as some astrologers think, but two removes. And I'll show you what I mean. For instance, if I went here to a treatise on cosmic fire, page 293, we would see a chart in which a solar logos is two removes away from a being called the unknown. A cosmic logos has seven solar systems. It's a natural progression from planetary schemes. A super constellational logos, the super cosmic logos, the unknown, which I assume to be the one about whom naught may be said, a one about whom naught may be said, has constellations for chakras. or cosmic logoi, working through constellations, working as chakras. So I think our solar logos is a heart center in the cosmic logos, and there is yet another heart center, another heart center, which is a constellation in the supercosmic logos called the one about whom naught may be said, our one about whom naught may be said. This tabulation, page 293, in a cosmic fire, and the tabulation on page 50 of Esoteric Astrology, point to the reality of the seven solar systems of which ours is one, as being a group, which is not the entirety of chakras in the one about whom naught may be said, but which is simply a chakra in the one about whom naught may be said. Well, I know I'm jumping back and forth from esoteric astrology to cosmic fire, but, you know, they really are, in a sense, inseparable. Yeah, they are. And at least to gain a larger perspective, they are inseparable. So anyway, Vulcan is pure first ray energy. We've been dealing in this paragraph with ray energies related to Virgo. We have the third ray being transmuted into a kind of a second ray influence for Virgo. And it seems to be subjected to the second and sixth ray among higher rays coming from what? From the one about whom naught may be said itself? Perhaps. And then we talk about first ray energy and we don't see much of the first ray in relation to Virgo, but we do see Vulcan, which is a ruling or conditioning energy and can point the way forward towards a more first ray expression. Now you kind of wonder, this is what you wonder, you could wonder, in the next solar system, will Virgo have still more of a first ray influence? Just the way it had a third ray influence in relation to the previous solar system, more of a second ray influence, or combined second and third ray in relation to the present solar system, and perhaps a combined first, second, and third ray in relation to the next solar system with the father aspect emerging. This is all speculation, but these speculations may give us a sense of great patterns which can prove revelatory for more practical considerations. There is another point in connection with the planetary influences which I would like to mention here because it emphasizes again the synthetic position of Virgo and its contribution as a major focal point for the distribution of energy to the fourth creative hierarchy. Well, Mercury is so strong, exalted. Fourth creative hierarchy is ruled by Mercury in the fourth ray. Fourth ray is so strong. That fourth creative hierarchy is Manus, and Virgo is one of the keenly intelligent signs. But it is important to register this idea that Virgo is a major focal point of distribution of energy to the fourth creative hierarchy. Well, I think it's... why don't I just, right here, say that this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology 87, Section B. Page 280, I guess. Yes, page 280. And let's begin a third program. I may not be able to go beyond that in this series right now.